Get everything for your next project at Menards. Tackle tough jobs with Loctite Power Grab. This all-purpose construction adhesive is easy to use and bonds to a variety of materials. Plus, it's high strength, paintable, and reduces the need for clamping with zero-second instant grab. Save big money on Loctite Power Grab at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 349 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
And this episode is sponsored by Brittany Marlin. Thanks, Brittany.
Thank you, Brittany.
Thanks, Brittany. So today we will be discussing part two of chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Bathilda's Secret. So make sure that you've read the chapter and you're ready to, I don't know why I wrote that. Walk down memory lane through the details. Oh, I know why I wrote that.
It does make sense. I thought for a second too. And then I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah, we're going to walk down memory lane.
I'm going to read memory lane for you. Make sure to follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends, because if you like us, then they will too. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Swish Flickcast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/swishflickcast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going and gives you access to all of our exclusive extras. As always, we are accepting Potter stories or just any fun stuff, questions, or concerns to our email, which is swishflickcast@gmail.com.
It's time for the
Okay. Harry and Hermione visited what was left of the Potter's old house, and they find out who's been watching them. Good old... good old Batty Baggy taking them back to her stinky house. It's not really her, though.
I know.
Poor lady.
It's like bad meat.
It's Baggini.
You smell like meat and cheese. Beef and cheese. You don't smell anything like Santa.
It's dark. It's dirty. She's acting strange. But she might have the sword.
Maybe.
We left off with Harry just about to go upstairs with her alone as per requested.
Red flag!
This is going to carry over into this one, folks. So, Bathilda seems to understand what Harry is saying, because she shuffles him to the door. Harry glances back at Hermione and he's like, it's cool. He's giving her a smile, like all is fine. And just picture her in this house, dust, rank, a mess, by herself. And she's like hugging herself.
I would too.
And she's looking towards the bookcase at this point, right? And this is when she does a little sneaky sneak. I'm taking this away. And so Harry goes, walks out of the room. And unbeknownst to Bathilda and Miss Hermione Granger, slips the silver framed picture of the unknown thief inside his jacket. Now he's a thief.
Yep.
Stealing a picture of a thief.
Stealing a picture of a thief.
Thiefception.
Full circle moment. So going up the stairs is a chore. It's very narrow, and Harry is worried that Bathilda's going to fall backwards, and he's tempted to kind of, like, put his hands, you know, on her bottom to, like, push her up because she's having a really hard time, and he doesn't want her to fall backwards on top of him. I mean, it's probably because she's dead. And she's wheezing a little bit, but they finally make it into a bedroom. It's pitch black. It smells awful. Bathilda shuts the door behind them.
Danger.
Danger.
I would like to keep that open, please. Also, danger. Can we open a window?
Danger.
Some fresh air up in
How
here.
Am I supposed to focus when there's Mickey snacks in my Discord?
Yeah. Jen.
Jeez. Dang. Anywho.
Joy.
So Megan.
Megan's been a Steve Irwin gift going, woo, God, danger, danger.
R.I.P. though. What a good human.
For real. The world lost a real good
That
one.
Was an awful day.
I love that whole family. God.
Yes, such good people. All right, so Harry lit his wand, and in that small period of time between shutting the door and him lighting his wand, Bathilda had moved unusually close to him without him hearing her approach. And that's creepy. Little snake slither.
Oh, also, like, don't breathe on me.
Oh. So Bathilda then asks him if he is Potter. Remember, he's polyjuiced. He looks like a balding, middle-aged dude. And Harry confirms to her that he is. And this is all that she needs. And Bathilda Nagini, or Bagini, sends for her master. Harry notes that he can feel the Horcrux beating faster than his own heart. So not only is his heart beating fast, he has the Horcrux also on top of it beating.
Do you think that that's excitement that Voldemort's coming? Because that's like the other part of its soul.
My brain thinks that it's wanting to be reunited.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I bet. I'm just going to say, I'm sure your soul does not want to be broken into pieces.
Because there's three right here, right now.
Yeah. And a fourth has been called.
And a fourth is ready to come on over. Yeah.
Come on over.
Come on over, baby. Oh.
Ruined it.
I did ruin it a little bit.
I thought that was a given.
Yeah.
Cool. Missed the mark.
I did.
Red flag.
You didn't even say anything, though.
Red flag.
Oh, man. Are you ready? Are you ready, kids?
Not at all.
Aye, aye, Tiffany.
Let's go. Quote, then she closed her eyes and several things happened at once.
I don't wanna.
Too bad. Harry's scar prickled painfully. The Horcrux twitched so that the front of his sweater actually moved. Yes. Like that. The dark, what is that? Fetid? Fitzed? What does this Fetid? Mean? Fetid?
I don't know. I'm gonna look it up though.
Yeah, what is that word? Fetid. I wanna say it right.
Fetid, like F-E-D-I-D.
Yeah. All right, I did
smelling
right the first time.
Extremely unpleasant.
Ooh. Good.
Fetid.
The dark, fetid room dissolved momentarily. So he's like slightly going into Voldemort right now in his head.
Mm-hmm. Because Voldemort's having a high emotion.
High emotion.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
So are you. He felt a leap of joy and spoke in a high, cold voice. Hold him.
Stop.
Harry swayed where he stood. The dark, foul-smelling room seemed to close around him again. He did not know what had just happened.
Reminder that this, like, we're reading this and it seems fast, but, like, it's like, you know what I mean?
She right. calls, he responds, it's like she changes.
He is there so quickly.
It's like when Grandpa Joe couldn't get up for years, and then all of a sudden there's a golden ticket. Whoop, snaps up out of bed. That's what Voldemort did. He's like, oh, Harry's there? Sorry, Lucius. I gotta leave the manor.
I hope it's not. I'm gonna say this, and I know Katie agrees with me. Megan, I think you do too. But I hate Grandpa Joe.
Yeah, Grandpa Joe
he's
sucks.
He's a bad person.
He's a bad person.
He's a bad person.
Mm. Yeah, Grandpa Joe sucks.
The worst.
Dance if you around. Don't know what we're talking about, go away. I'm kidding. But go watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I think that was called Charlie.
No, I thought Charlie.
Is it called Willy Wonka?
I thought Charlie and Charlie's Chocolate Factory was Johnny Depp.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, it's one of those. It's the first one.
We're talking about the character. I don't know anything about the actor.
I don't know anything about the actor, but Grandpa Joe just sucks.
Yeah, and if you have a Grandpa Joe, I'm sorry. I don't hate your grandfather. I hate this character.
up out of bed. Whoopee!
Oh, no, man. Lifetime supply of chocolate here. I mean, come.
You can put him on my list of undesirables, but I feel like he's more so on Tiffany's list of undesirables.
Do I have a list?
No, but we need to start one.
Mm. We could make one. We could all have a list of undesirables.
I really don't like him. He's a bad person. Liar. Anyways. So seeing Voldemort, the Horcrux twitching, and then the smell of the room, he's very confused. He's unwell. And he asks her for a third time if she has anything for him. Bagheera tells him, over here, and points toward a window. And while Harry is distracted, she takes the opportunity to transform, if you will. Trigger warning for...
Bodily mutilation.
That's a good word for it.
Quote, and in the instant that he looked away, his eyes raking the tangled mess for a sword hilt, a ruby, she moved weirdly. Harry saw it out of the corner of his eye. Panic made him turn, and horror paralyzed him as he saw the old body collapsing and the great snake pouring from the place where her neck had been. So
this is done well in the movie.
He nearly headless nicks her to put the snake inside.
Yeah.
He has to, she's got to have organs and bones removed.
I know.
He did so much for this. Like, this is disgusting. Like, what do we put? The snake struck as he raised his wand. The force of the bite to his forearm sent the wand spinning up towards the ceiling. Its light swung dizzily around the room and was extinguished. Then a powerful blow from the tail to his midriff knocked the breath out of him. He fell backward onto the dressing table into the mound of filthy clothing. I wonder if Nagini used that as bed.
So I think we've mentioned this before, but Meg and I saw the figure that they used at the studio tour of Bathilda. Terrifying.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yeah, I can find it.
Yeah, please.
Terrifying.
I want to see it.
Ooh.
So Harry is now in a battle with Nagini. And Hermione is hearing this all muffled from downstairs, by the way. So he rolls to narrowly miss her tail strike again, and fragments of glass are flying. Hermione is yelling to him from downstairs. Harry cannot gather enough breath to actually yell out for her. And Nagini's heavy body finally tries to hold him down. He finally gasps out no as he's pinned to the floor. And Nagini says, yes, whispered the voice. Yes, hold you. Hold you. And so Harry's trying to Accio his wand at this point. And I said, Mr. Potter is out here trying wandless magic. What a guy.
He's trying, man.
He's trying so hard. So obviously nothing happens. You don't know how to do that, sweet pea. And he tries to get up. Nagini is now squeezing the air from his lungs, quote, pressing the Horcrux hard into his chest, a circle of ice that throbbed with life, inches from his own frantic heart. And his brain was flooding with cold white light, all thought obliterated, his own breath drowned, distant footsteps, everything going. This person is actively dying. She's doing this enough to hopefully, in her mind, make him pass out to keep him, right? Hold you. And then a mix of things happen in the chaos. The Horcrux on his chest, in my brain, is recognizing the Horcrux of Nagini and is pounding like a heart. It's ready to reunite the three of them together. And Harry's now in Voldemort's head, and he's flying without aid, right? No brooms, no thestrals, no nothing. And he's coming to Nagini. And then Harry somehow is back at this because whether Nagini thought she was going to kill him or because Hermione is finally there and Nagini has to, like, deal with Hermione, he's finally, like, let go. The room was sour smelling of death, and Hermione's there. She's now battling Nagini. The window is shattered by her curse, and the December air is filling the room. So Harry ducks from work flying glass, and he finally sees his wand. He bends to get it, and Nagini's tail is still thrashing around. Hermione sends another curse, and Nagini flew through the air, hitting Harry full in the face, So this giant snake hits Harry in the face.
Oh, jeez. That what was worse, that or the branch from the Whomping Willow?
Oh, my gosh.
Probably pretty similar.
Yeah. And Harry raises his wand, and as he does this, his scar splits because Voldemort is so incredibly close. And Harry yells to Hermione, "He's coming, Hermione, he's coming." And as he yells this, the snake fell, hissing wildly, and everything is like still just pure chaos. Nagini is smashing shelves from the wall. There's splintered china flying everywhere. And Harry jumps over the bed to try and seize the dark shape that he thinks is Hermione.
Better hope it is.
It is, don't worry.
Yeah.
So she shrieks with pain as he pulls her back across the bed. Voldemort was coming. He was maybe already at the gate, and his scar hurt so badly. Hermione casts Confringo at Nagini, and the spell flies around the room. They jump from the window, and Hermione apparates them. And it's at this moment that Harry's scar, like, he describes it as bursting open. And he was now Voldemort. And he watches as himself and Hermione, as the Muggle couple, mm-hmm. vanish out from out the window. They're like jumping out the window and they vanish. What?
I'm just imagining what this actually looked like, and not the movie scene where it's Harry and Hermione, but these two middle-aged people.
Yeah. Right?
Literally.
So they are, and oh, sorry. And then Voldemort is like screaming with rage.
Yeah.
So Voldemort's scream, this is now, okay, I apologize. I'm not apologizing, but I really think it's important to just like read this part of the book because this is like a major flashback now.
Yeah.
So I'm just reading from the book. So enjoy. Voldemort's scream was Harry's, and his pain was Harry's too. He had been so close to getting him again, within sight of the house where he had come so close to death. The night, wet and windy, two children dressed as pumpkins waddling across the square, and the shop windows covered in paper spiders. All the tawdry Muggle trappings of a world in which they did not believe. And he was gliding along, that sense of purpose and power and rightness in him that he always knew on these occasions. Not anger, that was for the weaker souls than he, but triumph, yes. He had waited for this. He had hoped for it. Nice costume, mister. He saw the small boy's smile falter as he ran near enough to see beneath the hood of the cloak, saw the fear cloud his painted face. Then the child turned and ran away. Beneath the robe, he fingered the handle of his wand. One simple movement and the child would never reach his mother, but unnecessary, quite unnecessary. And along a new and darker street he moved, and now his destination was in sight at last, the Fidelius charm broken, though they did not know it yet, and he made less noise than the dead leaves slithering along the pavement as he drew level with the dark hedge and stared over it. Yeah.
If you think about it, like him just thinking about murdering these children just because, it's such a line drawn from his life.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't, like, you're in death, you'll never have your parents, like I never had mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross.
It is. They had not drawn the curtains. He saw them quite clearly in their little sitting room. The tall, black-haired man in his glasses, making puffs of colored smoke erupt from his wand for the amusement of the small black-haired boy in his blue pajamas. The child was laughing and trying to catch the smoke, to grab it in his small fist. This is so sad.
It is.
It really is.
Go ahead and cry.
A door opened and the mother entered, saying words he could not hear, her long, dark red hair falling over her face. Now the father scooped up the son and handed him to the mother. He threw his wand down upon the sofa and stretched, yawning. The gate creaked a little as he pushed it open, but James Potter did not hear. His white hand pulled out the wand beneath his cloak and pointed it at the door, which burst open. He was over the threshold as James came sprinting into the hall. It was easy, too easy. He had not even picked up his wand. Lily, take Harry and go. It's him. Go, run. I'll hold him off. Hold him off. Without a wand in his hand, he laughed before casting the curse. Avada Kedavra. The green light filled the cramped hallway. It lit the pram pushed against the wall. It made the banisters glare like lightning rods, and James Potter fell like a marionette whose strings were cut. Mm-hmm. He could hear her screaming from the upper floor, trapped. But as long as she was sensible, she, at least, had nothing to fear.
And there's Snape's request.
He climbed the steps, listening with faint amusement to her attempts to barricade herself in. She had no wand upon her either. How stupid they were. And how trusting, thinking that their safety lay in friends, that weapons could be discarded even for moments. He forced the door open.
So telling of him.
Right?
He has no friends.
Yeah. He forced the door open, cast aside the chair and boxes hastily piled against it with one lazy wave of his wand, and there she stood, the child in her arms. At the sight of him, she dropped her son into the crib behind her and threw her arms wide, as if this would help, as if in shielding him from sight, she hoped to be chosen instead. Interjection. Funnily enough, it sure as heck did help.
Mm-hmm. What did?
Her throwing her arms wide in front of him, shielding him from sight.
Yeah. Yep.
Not Harry, not Harry, please not Harry. Stand aside, you silly girl. Stand aside now. That's twice he asked her to.
I'm counting.
FYI. Okay. Not Harry, please no, take me, kill me instead. This is my last warning. Not Harry, please, have mercy, not Harry, please, I'll do anything. Stand aside, girl.
Five.
So he actually gave her five chances.
Mm-hmm. What a good guy.
Right.
But honestly, if we backtrack just a titch, he could hear her screaming from the upper floor. We don't know in this what she's saying, but her husband's dead.
Right? I know.
I'd be screaming for James as much as I would be screaming for Harry, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really pick out Harry in this moment, too. But, like, I imagine her screaming
for
James.
I'm sure she's just scream crying. And that, she too. Knows what just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And the laziness of the wand flick makes me enraged.
Yeah. He could have forced her away from the crib, but it seemed more prudent to finish them all. So that was him deciding, I don't care about my promise to Snape anymore now.
He did more than what he thought
was required.
Was request, or what was even requested. Like,
yeah, requested.
I did this for you one time out of the goodness of my heart. Ew. I did this five times. I'm a great person for doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Psycho.
The green light flashed around the room and she dropped like her husband. The child had not cried all this time. He could stand, clutching the bars of his crib, and he looked up into the intruder's face with a kind of bright interest, perhaps thinking that it was his father who hid beneath the cloak, making more pretty lights, and his mother would pop up any moment, laughing. He pointed the wand very carefully into the boy's face. He wanted to see it happen. The destruction of this one inexplicable danger. The child began to cry. It had seen that he was not James. He did not like it crying. He had never been able to stomach the small ones whining in the orphanage. Avada Kedavra. And then he broke. He was nothing. Nothing but pain and terror. And he must hide himself. Not here in the rubble of the ruined house, where the child was trapped and screaming, but far away, far away. No, he moaned. Now this is Harry. Mm-hmm. Now we're back to Voldemort. The snake rustled on the filthy, cluttered floor, and he had killed the boy, and yet he was the boy. Wait,
there's
what?
The answer right there.
Hold on, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean the answer?
Is that, like, yeah, he was the boy, so, like, he knows that... Hold on. I was thinking we were still in Voldemort's brain.
No, that is. So the snake rustled on the filthy, cluttered floor.
This is Voldemort.
And he had killed the boy, and yet he was the boy.
Because a part of him lives in Harry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, What's confusing about reading this is that obviously right before we hear Harry moan no, we were back in time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now we're back at Bathilda's house, right? So again, the snake rustled on the filthy, cluttered floor in Bathilda's house. Mm-hmm. And he had killed the boy, and yet he was the boy.
So to me, it can be two meanings of he was the boy. He was the boy in the fact that now we know that Harry is a Horcrux. They're interconnected. His soul lives on in Harry, right? Mm-hmm. He lives while Voldemort lives, right? Instead of, like, if you think about it the other way around, is the way Dumbledore describes it later. Or he is the boy screaming in the crib. You know what I mean? He's screaming at the windowsill in that way.
Got it.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what my brain says.
No, okay, that makes sense. Okay. So it's almost like he's paralleling these moments.
She tells you without telling you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, Harry said again. And now we're back into Voldemort's head here. And now he stood at the broken window of Bathilda's house, immersed in memories of his greatest loss. And at his feet, the great snake slithered over broken china and glass. He looked down and saw something, something incredible. No, Harry said again. Hermione, Harry, it's all right. You're all right. Now we're back in Voldemort's head. He stooped down and picked up the smashed photograph. There he was, mm-hmm. the unknown thief, the thief he was seeking. So I also think that this moment is Voldemort potentially thinking that Harry is on to his search as well. So, like, he sees that Harry had this photo.
But he doesn't see that Harry has the photo. It's just on the floor.
I know, but I think that he, I would assume that.
But the room's a mess.
Yeah. That's true.
Know yet.
You don't think so? That he might worry that Harry is on to, not the Horcrux hunt, but the hunt for the Elder Wand.
I mean, maybe.
Because I don't think, no, because that would be giving Harry too much credit in his opinion. You have to think like he thinks. Only he would understand, and Ollivander would understand, that there is the death stick and the wand of destiny and the unbeatable wand out there.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows about that, Megan, right?
True.
It's just funny to me that he doesn't know about the Deathly Hallows, and that ends up being it.
I know.
Right.
I guess he could fear, like, if that was something to think about, he could fear that Harry was trying to find this ultimate wand so that he'd be able to defeat Voldemort.
Yeah.
I can see that way of thinking, but it's not my way of thinking, but that's, I don't have to be right.
But you probably
are. No, it's interesting. Oh my God.
And then Harry is saying, no, I dropped it. I dropped it. Cause he's seeing this photo through Voldemort's mind.
Mm-hmm.
The photo that he had put in his pocket and he dropped as they jumped out the window and apparated.
Right.
That whole, like, all of that, I don't know. I think it's brilliant.
What is
that story? It sucks, but, like, the way it's written.
It's one of my favorite parts about this whole book, even though it ruins me.
Oh, it's terrible.
It didn't ruin me before I had, like, my babies. But, like, I feel like if you have connections with small children, it ruins you a little bit. In a different way, especially as a grown person. But the way that it's written really makes me want to have a Voldemort POV series.
Right.
And just the way, just the way that the author writes, too.
The way that the scene is set, like even talking about the green light flashing off the stroller.
That was in the movie, too. They did that for us.
And like how... Yeah, and like how it looked like lightning on the...
Yeah.
I know.
Lightning.
And I just think that like this, you can tell that you're in Voldemort's mind because of the writing too. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a 17-year-old kid's head.
You're in arrogant Voldemort's head.
Exactly. So like even... It, like just the way that it's composed is different, you know?
Night, wet and windy.
Right.
Two children dressed as pumpkins waddling across the square, and the shop windows covered in paper spiders, all the tawdry muggle trappings of a world in which they did not believe. Like, that's beautiful.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is beautiful.
I know.
No credit to Voldemort. That's just the author.
No. And then, like, towards the end when it's flipping back and forth, but it all makes sense. And, like, I feel like Harry's, like, slowly drifting out of Voldemort's mind. Mm-hmm. And
I don't know.
It's really good. And you get information here that you have no idea what to do with when you read it the first time. It doesn't make sense till way later.
It's also interesting to me how that little flashback scene aligns in Cursed Child as well.
So does Harry saw all that just now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus, Harry.
Yeah.
That's one of the saddest.
And he's like screaming
of that. Play.
It's very hard to watch.
It is. And it's so well done. And that's when I started like full on sobbing and bleeding.
Yeah.
No bleed. It's not funny. All right. Well, now we don't have to be in Voldemort's head anymore. Oof.
Hello, Swishers. I started taking Hormone Harmony because I was feeling a little bit down and off and experiencing some bad sleep quality. Also having cravings and bloating, but now it's easier to manage PMS with Hormone Harmony. It helps to support hormonal balance and regulation, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, and it also improves sleep quality and occasional bloating and gas. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SWISH at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SWISH for 15% off today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we hear Hermione going, Harry, it's okay. Wake up, wake up.
So are we in the Forest of Dean now?
Mm-hmm. And what's his face? Phineas. This is where he reports where they are.
Yeah.
Because she opens her bag and says,
where they are?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. He has an anxiety on. So we're reminded he's Harry, not Voldemort. There's no snake. Like, he's telling himself this as he's coming to. So he opens his eyes, and Hermione's like, do you feel all right? And he lies, of course, and says yes. So he's, like, taking in his surroundings. They're back in the tent. He could tell it's almost dawn, and he's drenched in sweat. He can feel it on his clothes. He can feel it on the sheets. What?
You can feel it on the sheets.
That's what it says. Like, you feel it on the sheets all around him. So Hermione confirms, yes, we got away. I had to use a hover charm to get you on the bed because I couldn't move you. And she's like, you've been ill, quite ill. And Harry, like, takes a look at her and notices she's got, like, purple shadows under her eyes. Yeah. And she has a small sponge in her hand, so she must have been wiping his face.
Do you think this was Nagini bite as well as messed up Horcrux dreams?
Yeah. I think it was a mix of both.
Because, like, I'm sure that's not great venom for you.
True.
No, not at all. So we get answers because Harry's like trying to put together what's going on. They left Godric's Hollow hours ago. It's almost morning now. And Harry said it. And I've been what? Unconscious? Not exactly, said Hermione uncomfortably. You've been shouting and moaning and things. Mm-hmm. She added in a tone that made Harry feel uneasy. What had he done? Screamed curses like Voldemort? Cried like the baby in the crib?
It makes me sad because he's like so self-conscious by it and he can't control any of it.
No, not any of it. And Hermione knows that, but like,
he's still embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That had to be terrifying for her. Like, I don't know if you're going to come out of this. She has no idea. Well, I'll get into this in a minute. She has no idea what happened. She had no idea what happened up there yet.
Mm-mm. No.
So she continues, I couldn't get the Horcrux off you, Hermione said, and he knew she wanted to change the subject. It was stuck. Stuck to your chest. You've got a mark. I'm sorry. I had to use a severing charm to get it away. The snake bit you too, but I've cleaned the wound and put some Dittany on it. So he pulls his t-shirt away from himself to look, and there's like this scarlet oval over his heart where the locket had burned him. And he can also see like half-healed puncture marks on his arm. Good thing she got that Dittany. Like,
mm-hmm.
She's a smart cookie.
Hermione put the Horcrux in her bag and thinks they should keep it off for a while. You think? Should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah, late.
And then Harry says, we shouldn't have gone to Godric's Hollow. It's my fault. It's all my fault, Hermione. I'm sorry. It's not your fault. I wanted to go too. I really thought Dumbledore might have left the sword there for you. Yeah, well, we got that wrong, didn't we? And then finally Hermione's like, what happened? Like, what happened when she took you upstairs? Was the snake hiding somewhere? Did it just come out and kill her and attack you? So I literally never thought about it before. Like, this has been a long stretch of hours. We don't know exactly how long.
Mm-hmm.
She had to have been racking her brain trying to figure out, like, did this happen? Did that happen? Like, trying to piece it together.
Live?
Yeah, like, is it the venom making him do this? Like, I saw Voldemort. Like, what the heck?
Hey! Is that her first time?
Seeing him?
Did she see him at the ministry? I don't think she did.
I don't think
no,
so.
No, because she was knocked out.
Yeah.
And then six, he wasn't there. She's never seen him before.
Yikes.
That first meeting. It's a meet cute.
The Hermione Voldemort meet cute.
Oh, I'm sure it's a fanfic.
Sure it is.
We met in Bethel's bedroom.
Sorry, I keep slouching.
It felt chaotic reading it from Harry's POV. So, like, imagine here's Hermione down in the creepily, very dark, candlely lit, overstuffed, dusty room that smells terrible.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Mia said she might have seen him at the Seven Potters
Kingsley.
Chase.
Yeah, with Kingsley. You're right.
True. Okay.
But they weren't, like, meeting cute. That was just a pass by.
You're shaking McKenna. Meet cute with the meat suit.
It was a meet cute with Nagini.
Meet cute, M-E-A-T.
Sickening. You should be sorry. How dare you?
Hilarious. But not. So Hermione just hears this scuffling from upstairs, runs up there, sees Nagini, where's Bathilda, then Voldemort, then they apparate away and Harry starts sputtering nonsense as she takes care of him for I don't know how long, you know? Like, she can't take him anywhere. So Harry has to explain it all, that Bathilda was the snake, or the snake was her, and Hermione's like, oh, what? So Harry's like, Bathilda must have been dead a while. The snake was inside her. Voldemort put her in Godric's Hollow to wait, and he says, you were right, he knew I'd go back. Hermione obviously looks revolted and nauseated. So Harry explains more that Bathilda didn't want to talk in front of her because she could only speak parcel tongue. And then once they were up there, he heard in his head that she sent a message to Voldemort, and Voldemort said to keep him there. And then he remembered the snake coming out of Bathilda's neck. Hermione did not need to know the details. She changed. Changed into the snake and attacked. Like,
changed. He protected her from that.
Yeah. Like, she was already revolted enough.
Yeah.
And had gone an entire night probably thinking he was going to die.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to kill me. Just keep me there till you knew who came. Harry's literally described as sick at heart, thinking, like, it would have all been worth it if I could have at least killed the snake.
It's gonna get worse.
Mm-hmm. So, like, of course, he's got to get up and like do something. So he throws off the covers and Hermione's like, you need to rest. And he's like, no offense, but you look terrible. You need to rest. I'm fine. Give me my wand. I'll take watch. And she doesn't answer. And she looks like she's going to cry because his wand was broken. The Holly and Phoenix wand was nearly severed in two. One fragile strand of Phoenix feather kept both pieces hanging together. The wood had splintered apart completely. Harry took it into his hands as if it was a living thing that had suffered a terrible injury. He could not think properly. Everything was a blur of panic and fear. This is your one weapon.
Mm-hmm.
This is your way of life.
Yeah.
This is helping you survive.
Connection of the twin cores. What you yeah. think is keeping you alive.
Mm-hmm. Like, immediate panic. So he's like, Hermione, mend it. And she's like, I don't think that's going to work. And he's like, just try. So, of course, she does try. It does reseal together again. So he tries Lumos, where it just sparks a little bit and goes out. And then Expelliarmus, which made Hermione's wand give this little jerk, but it didn't leave her hand. And that was too much for it, and it split in two again. So he got to watch it break again. Yay. Yes.
We were wrong about something. This is not the Forest of Dean.
Oh, we're not there yet?
No, they move.
Mm.
I was trying to find the moment when it happens.
When she says it.
Do they say Ron in this chapter?
She does mention Ron.
So that's when the Deluminator works.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And so she keeps thinking she hears somebody walking around, so they move.
That's right.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure we had that right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not until.
So we're somewhere.
Next chapter.
That's right.
We're somewhere.
We're almost there.
So he's looking at his wand. He stared at it aghast.
Oh, Kate, you have this.
What?
Then she says Ron's name.
Oh, yeah. Unable to take in what he was seeing, the wand that had survived so much. And I wonder if it's like an extra blow because we all know that that's Fox's tail feather in there. So that's like another connection to Voldemort that's just like crumbling. I'm sorry. Oh my God, Dumbledore. That's like crumbling around him.
Crumbledore.
You know? No, that was Bathilda.
Mm.
So Hermione says she's so sorry. She thinks it was her because she cast a blasting curse and it went all over that room and it must have hit him. And he's like, it's an accident. We'll find a way to repair it. See her, because guess what? He does.
Yeah.
He
sure
does. Doesn't need no spello tape. Just bust out
that
other one.
Can't believe the movie had him break it. Throw it.
I appreciate Hermione not giving him false hope. She's like, I really don't think we'll be able to fix it. Like, remember Ron's wand? And that's when she says his name. And Harry is thinking, okay, Ollivander is kidnapped right now. Grigorovich is dead. Like, where am I supposed to get a new wand? Well, he said, a falsely matter-of-fact voice, I'll just borrow yours for now, then, while I keep watch. Her face glazed with tears, Hermione handed over her wand, and he left her sitting beside his bed, desiring nothing more than to get away from her. Do you think he wants to get away so he doesn't, like, put any misplaced anger on her? Yeah. Or do you think he's trying to hide his emotions over his wand?
Sometimes when you're so worked up like that, especially somebody like Harry who is used to like going through those things mostly on his own, maybe wants to be alone so he can feel his feels, but also you place that anger on the people you're closest to, and you take it out on them.
Yeah.
And so I feel like he didn't want to do that to her.
Like, he obviously knows it was really an accident. Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're right. Like,
sometimes removing yourself from the situation is the best option. Like,
I don't want to say something hurtful because I don't mean it.
They're
but
exhausted.
I'm really upset right now.
He's been bitten. His wand is broken. They just met with Voldemort. He just saw all that stuff. He saw it happen from that POV, you know?
Yeah.
He needs a break.
Break me off a piece of that fancy
feast.
Are we ready for
Lady Yeah. Yeah.
Dusty Fur asks, why do you think Voldy didn't kill the boy? It's weird for him to say unnecessary when half the murders he commits aren't necessary.
He had a purpose that night, right?
I think he didn't want to bring attention to himself too soon.
Because then you've got a muggle murder you've got to deal with when you're trying to commit this other murder that's on the same street. Like, we cannot be having
that. He wanted to enjoy what he went to go do there.
And he needed to do it. Yeah.
So
the one time he doesn't really monologue.
Yeah, for real.
Maybe that's why he tried monologuing.
Gil asks, why do you think the author included the POV change? And did you guys appreciate it when reading 7 or did you not like it?
I loved it. And I think that it was, I think it's necessary because we've been viewing Voldemort through Dumbledore and through Harry through Dumbledore and getting their own versions of how Voldemort will think and how Voldemort will feel about certain things. And it was a nice, air quotes, break and change to actually see the thoughts and feelings of this villain, this horrible, horrible, unredeemable, in my own opinion, villain.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that because we all, not we all maybe, but like we all like a baddie story.
Yeah.
You know, I like a good villain to be a villain. Mm-hmm. I don't want any coming back for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want you.
I hate redemption arcs for villains.
They're okay sometimes. Some of them are unnecessary. Star Wars. But I like a villain to be a villain. And I think that we get that with him. And I like that we see it here.
I also think it's interesting that, like, we know what happened with Lily and James. But this is kind of the first time that we really read the story of, like, genuinely step-by-step what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes it... Again, it makes it so real with the level of detail, but also like you see James playing with Harry.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then it's like yawns a little, and is getting ready for bed.
I know. It's like another little glimpse of like the letter that we got earlier in this book, you know,
like a tiny little piece of life.
Right.
And like we get so little of them. And it sucks.
Marguerite asks, what do you think the Potters might have been doing that evening if Lord Voldemort hadn't come?
They were about to put Harry to bed. Yeah. And, you know, just chill.
Yeah. Celebrate Halloween.
Yeah. Probably maybe like watch the Muggle kids.
You think they were going to pass out candy?
Wouldn't it be cute if they passed out candy to Muggle kids?
I would do it, guys. I know.
But if
right.
they did in previous years, wouldn't that be adorable?
It would be.
James would totally be like, come on, just let me put like one fizzing Wisby in there.
Let me put just like one chocolate frog. Okay, let's do one more.
Vinny.
I like this one. Michigan McKenna, could flex tape fix a broken wand?
What's flex tape?
The commercial from Billy Mays. Like, it's like the barrel of water.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I think it could.
Where it's like all of my problems and it's like a trip to Ireland.
Yeah. There it is. There's the gif.
Freaking great.
I think it could.
Flex tape. I never knew what it was called, I guess.
All right. Discord discourse. Sarkar, we deserve Nagini's story. How did she go from a compassionate person to someone so cruel and gross, literally living in a witch's dead body? I know. I think that, I mean, you guys have heard me, at least specifically, talk numerous times about how much I really, really love the Fantastic Beasts series. And I think that we really have been robbed of quite a few storylines that I would love to see concluded. Including Nagini.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Maybe we'll get it.
We don't know. The TV series coming out was a shock to everybody, so.
Maybe it'll be a TV series eventually.
Well, and maybe they'll get enough money from that to start making the rest.
Maybe.
I'd rather it be a TV series. You could flesh it out better.
Maybe. Yeah. I feel like they rushed too many things in that.
Well, for sure, you're trying to fit everything in like an hour and a half, hour 45.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't like it.
All right. Vinny says, Cursed Child is the best summation of the themes and character of Harry Potter there is.
Oh. I'm shocked to hear someone say something in favor of
Cursed
Child.
Would like your dissertation on this, please?
I mean, I just think that it unfortunately portrays Harry perfectly.
Aw.
Well, he's got major trauma issues he has not worked through.
Exactly. And like I don't mean that in like a negative way towards Harry, but
no, not at all. It's the product of what happened.
Exactly, because like we've said numerous times, like these characters, like what makes these characters so good is how real they are.
Yeah.
And like it's unfortunate, but I think it is real. Yes, and specifically, like, just the ending in general is just really well done, yep. I think.
Yeah.
All right. Fan story time.
Fan story. This comes from Louise. I believe I'm saying that correctly.
Let me look.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Louise.
Trigger warning for religious deconstruction / cultish behavior. Hi, my name is Louise. I am a Ravenclaw Thunderbird. You're double bird. And I have a dogwood wand with a phoenix feather core.
Double birds!
Double prizes!
Double prize!
My Potter origin story is a little dark, but I'd still like to share it with you. I was raised in a cult, I'd preferred not to say which, and was taken away from them by the state when I was 11. I can hear the bell ding in my head now. Here's a real ding. Oh, man. There you go. You got 2¼.
Oh my God.
I mean 1¼. I was lucky and was put into a foster home with a very kind foster mother who helped me begin recovering from what I'd been through. Mm-hmm. About a year after my placement, my foster brother, though he was actually her biological son, had a book fair at his school, and I was allowed to not only go with him and the rest of the family, but was allowed to choose a book of my very own to buy. Mm. I'd never been able to buy things for myself or really have things that were all mine before, so I spent almost a full hour trying to decide which book to get.
That's Katie.
Yes. Ask Meg. She will not go shoe shopping with me.
Mm.
Early on in my search, however, I had noticed a book with the image of a boy falling. I didn't catch the broomstick beneath him to realize that he was flying, while trying to catch a winged golden ball on it and thought that it looked interesting. But when I read the back and realized that it was about witchcraft, the programming I'd grown up with kicked in and I walked away from it, afraid that reading about witchcraft would taint or hurt me. But even though I wasn't supposed to, that's in quotes, I kept coming back to that book. I was just drawn to it. Eventually, my foster mother got impatient while waiting for me. It really had been about an hour of me not choosing anything, and she told me that I had to pick something because we needed to leave. So in a panic to make sure that I got a book of my own instead of nothing, I grabbed the forbidden book, and my foster mother bought it for me. But I didn't read it. It sat untouched in the room I shared with my foster sisters for over a year because the programming kept kicking in and I was too afraid to read it. And then one day something happened. I was just about to leave for school when I realized that I had forgotten to do a specific part of my homework. I'd forgotten to find a new book to read in my English class. I hated disappointing myself and my foster family by failing to do an assignment. Yes, I am very much a Hermione. And I grabbed the only book in the house that I hadn't read before, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. When I got to my English class later that day, our teacher gave us sustained silent reading time to begin our new books. I started reading Harry Potter, a little hesitant because of the program and a little excited because it was forbidden, but within 2 chapters, I was hooked. I ended up reading so fast that I made it to chapter 5 by the time SSR was over.
Nice.
And I loved everything about it. Harry's story, which resonated with me on such a deep level, the idea of him, like me, having someone swoop in and save him and bring him to a better life, and later on the Weasley family, who reminded me so much of my own foster family, who eventually adopted me, kind of like the Weasleys did with Harry.
Aww.
Really I finished sweet. The book the next morning.
Oh my God.
I probably could have done it sooner had I not had other homework. And wrote nerdy Harry Potter stories, early version fan fictions, in my line notebooks while I waited for the next book to come out.
Huh.
This was all the way back in the late 90s, early 2000s. But I've been a Potterhead ever since. I got all the new books as they came out and attended several midnight book releases. Yes. I watched all the movies as they came out, and I made friends with other fans, both in school and online through AIM and chat rooms.
Yes.
Shout out to everyone old enough to remember AOL chat rooms and AIM.
Yes. Oh, I was the queen of away messages that were just right? music lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
The drama.
Emo.
I reread the books now every couple of years and have started two book clubs with the Harry Potter series as our only books. Harry Potter started out as my escape and eventually became my example of using a hard history to make a better future. I ended up earning degrees in business and child psychology and now run a child care center for very young children with emotional and behavioral problems. Life was never easy for me, and it's still not, but Harry Potter has always made it a little happier. Thank you guys for doing this podcast, keeping the Potter fandom alive, and for making me laugh like a nutcase in my car while stuck in traffic.
What a great story.
What an amazing person you are, and your resilience is amazing. Like, you're just...
Yes.
Wow.
And to find a story that, you know, you just were drawn to it. It's like you knew.
Yeah.
And then you finally read it, and you just, like... feel connected to it. Yes. And it's also an escape, and now look at what you're doing with your life. Look at you.
Oh my gosh.
And thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, such kind words, and I'm so proud of you, and I can feel from your story that you're proud of yourself.
Yeah.
What, like, an amazing turnaround.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh my goodness. Thank you.
And
for
I love
your story.
That you're helping young children now too.
Yeah.
Core memory.
Yep.
Thank you for your story.
Thank you so much.
I doubt that this joke is going to make you laugh so hard like a nutcase in your car.
Never know.
Who's to say?
How do you know that's what you really desire? Because Arid said so.
I almost said something about that.
I can't. If you want to follow, myself and Katie are on Instagram and TikTok at The Petrus Family, and Tiffany's on Instagram at TiffSwish_flick. We did, in fact, get a bingo today.
Did
Marguerite
we?
From Gryffindor. But that's okay. Let's pull up those house standings still, friends.
Oh, here we go.
Better not be Slytherin, I'll tell you that.
Slytherin is in first
place. Bull. What? No.
Gryffindor is in second. Ravenclaw's in third. And Hufflepuff is in fourth.
Poor Puffs.
I feel like there aren't a lot of Puffs in here
today.
There
weren't.
Apparently all Star Kerr needed was a Twilight reference. And I don't think I made
disappointed.
I didn't make one all night.
I didn't talk about Jacob Sibling at all.
Insane.
What's wrong with us?
A lot.
Gil, I know. I have failed you all. I'm so sorry.
It's terrible. It's a tragedy, these snakes.
Congrats, snakes. I'm proud of you.
Boo hiss.
Oh, hiss. Get it?
You know what? I'm just going to go, Louise, this is for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dedicated to you and your progress and your constant work and your giving back.
Awesome.
This is for you. All right. That concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles get you down.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.